Hey everybody, it's Scott. A few weeks ago, I got to sit down with Jafar and Laura over at the Who Are You podcast, another podcast that is watching through Babylon 5, and we talked about Objects at Rest, the penultimate episode of the show, Season 5, Episode 21. If you've been with us on the spoiler side of things, listening to our Beyond the Rim section, you know that I have thoughts about this episode, and I shared those thoughts with Laura and Jafar on this episode here. If you are watching B5 for the first time with us, we have not gotten to Objects at Rest yet, so you should stop this episode now and then come back in a few months after we've talked about it so you don't get spoiled. For everyone else, I'm going to toss it over to Jafar and Laura, and be sure to follow the link down below to their podcast. Give them a like, subscribe, follow, show them the love. They have been a great podcast to watch Babylon 5 along with, and it was just a wonderful opportunity to have a chat with them. Thanks.
Welcome to Who Are You? This is the Babylon 5 Watchcast, hosted by two former strangers, now friends, who have gotten to know each other while we're watching a favorite show from their childhood, Babylon 5. I'm Jafar.
And I'm Laura.
And today we have with us
Scott.
Hey, Scott.
Hi.
So nice to have you back.
Oh, checks in the mail, Laura.
Anytime, Scott.
Yeah. So Scott from Grey 17, you want to give a quick plug? You know, you get one at the end of episode 2, but just let everyone know where they can find you.
Sure. Yeah. So we're Grey 17 podcast. We are like these guys watching Babylon 5. We've actually got some folks who have never watched the show before and some folks who have watched it way too many times. And we are careening into season 5. So not too far behind you all, but we've still got some distance to travel before we're through. And you can find us everywhere.
Yeah, if you listener, if you're getting sad that we're getting close to the end and you haven't checked out Grey 17 yet, I don't know why you haven't, but please go do, because you can do it all over again with a whole new group of people.
If you find you need more Byron in your life, come on down.
They're about to do more.
More Byron. You were so upset that we were past Byron. Just skip on by.
Just tragically miss him in every single episode since. Yeah, definitely.
Totally what actually happens. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I've been colloquially referring to it as going beyond the rim when a Babylon 5 podcast finishes Babylon 5.
Yeah, it's been happening a lot lately. It's going to happen more, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
a whole group of us all started within a couple months of each other. So
it's like the third age.
Yum first, and then us, and then you, and Babylon 5 for the first time is ahead of you guys, but behind us.
Yeah, they got us. They're ahead of us by like 4 or 5 episodes, so they'll be done shortly before us.
And then there are a couple others that started about a year after us that are, some are moving at a slower pace, some are moving at the same pace, but they're just behind us. So yeah, whole another set of Babylon 5 podcasters out there.
And just wait. Really cool. I mean, this is like the third generation, I think, of like the group of podcasts. But I have a feeling if we ever do get that reboot, that there'll be that fourth big surge. And we'll just be the old guys looking on going, oh, wasn't that cute?
Yeah, that'll be neat.
Now, would you see yourself as more of a Vorlon or more of a Shadow in that situation, looking out at the next generation of Babylon 5 podcasters?
If you ask the people I work with, I may have a dictator streak, so I probably would dabble more than I probably should. I guess that would make me a Shadow.
All right.
It's like, you probably should.
Jafar, what do you think we would be?
I don't imagine I will have the energy to care terribly much. I will wish everyone well and join up for a league podcast that happen.
Oh yeah.
Here and there. But I don't think I could. I don't know what influence I could wield, to be perfectly honest.
I think I remain human still. Yeah.
You could be a Vorlon human, you know, go into your counter suit a million years from now.
Yeah.
That's
maybe
true.
We're more like the Minbari, like, and we were around, but
really, we're just going to be on our porch swings yelling at the kids to get off our lawn is what it's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah,
for sure.
seems legit. Yeah.
All right. Well, you've joined us a couple of times, so we've gotten to ask you, who are you and what do you want? And today the tables get turned as you get to ask us the one.
Okay, so I didn't know I had to ask the question. I thought you were asking the question, so I am ill-prepared.
Yeah, I should have totally prepped you for this, and I didn't, so sorry.
It's half the fun, is letting me flounder. okay, sure. Remind me, I have to ask you a question about what one thing you would X, Y, and Z. Is that the plan?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, the one thing. So I can give you a couple ones we've done on past episodes here. Like, you know, we've asked, what's the one childhood fad you regret? Mm. That was a fun one.
Oh, nice.
I have a one I would like to ask Scott, even.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That we've done together, but I think Scott might have something unique to add that I might be interested in.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Scott, I want to know, what is the one best book you've read lately?
Ooh, well, okay. Define lately. Can I go back a couple years?
Yeah, okay. Like recent history, sure.
Yeah, because it's on the top of my head because they're going to start filming the movie in June. So I'm extremely excited.
Oh, how exciting.
And it is Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir. Have you read Hail Mary?
I have heard of this book. I have not read it.
Oh, did I? Okay, so I've talked about it before?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think you might have talked about it in a League podcast, but you sold it real heavy. And I picked it up and I read it a couple of months ago. And it's great.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed
the movie's going to star Ryan Gosling, so he's going to be ugly as hell as per usual, but yeah, no, it's a fun one. So for I won't give too much of the plot away, but for some reason the sun is losing its energy, and just a tiny bit, but even a tiny bit makes it a little colder here. So a person is sent off on a team to find out why, and shenanigans happens, and it is a lot of sci-fi now is dystopian and kind of like, oh God, we're all going to die. And yeah, this book starts like, oh God, we're all going to die. But it's a hopeful book. And I like hope every now and then.
Yeah. Same.
I really enjoyed it. It was a good read.
Yeah. Andy Weir's a good author.
Yeah. I've read The Martian, as we all should have at this point.
I think this is better than The Martian. I think it's, Martian's great, but I think this has a more interesting story.
I would say because he's got three like big books.
Yeah, he has, right? Has Artemis, which I was not a huge fan of because it was like a crime thriller thing, and it was just like it's on the
Artemis
moon.
Was okay.
Yeah, I was just like, it just wasn't my style. I like more of the hey, let's survive a lot of weird shit.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Project Hail Mary. So if I haven't thanked you on pod for that recommendation, well,
there you go.
Then I might have in a previous episode. Thank you for that recommendation because it was a lovely book.
At the moment, I'm rereading Claudia's autobiography because I needed it for, obviously, what happens in season 5 when she's not here. So some background material. That book's depressing.
Oh, no.
I mean, she comes out at the end in a good spot, and she's still in a good spot from what I can tell after chatting with her only a couple times. But holy shit, she walks through some stuff.
I have to give that a read.
The guy who plays Robert.
Well, did
the
we vamp enough to...
Yeah, I got some good stuff. I was going to say the guy who plays Robert the Bruce in Braveheart is a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
And if you read the book, you'll know why. I'll go down my usual trappings because I am as much of a B5 fan. I am a movie nerd. So what is a one film that defines or at least thematically helps to show who you are as a person?
Oh, that's deep.
Ooh.
Hop on the couch. I charge by the hour.
Yikes. I feel like I get a lot of my sense of humor from Ghostbusters.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I think if you can watch Ghostbusters and have a laugh here and there, that you will probably appreciate my sense of humor.
Perfect.
Or at the very least, understand that I'm trying to be funny if I'm not.
I think the summer that I spent literally almost every day watching a Star Wars movie, and it was like one of the first three, you know, in rotation. Because I think that, I don't remember the circumstances exactly, but, you know, my father was a college professor, but he taught summer school. Mm-hmm. And my mom had gone back to work for the government, and her hours were kind of weird because she worked for the Census Bureau. So I would get stuck just at home by myself a lot of days during that summer. And so I just went back to comfort movie and watched one of the Star Wars quite a lot. And I think that that really, you know, that sort of hero's journey in Star Wars mm-hmm. impacted me a lot.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I think it made me a little odd in that because the characters that I saw in movies that were the heroes were kind of all men. I started acting more like a man at that time in the 90s. It was a very strange thing.
How much flannel did you have?
Well, I also lived in rural Oklahoma, so it's a split between like flannel and cutoff jeans, right, for the summer, because
there you go,
it's pretty hot. So yeah, that made a lot of an impact on me. The off the wall choice also might be The Day After. Do you guys remember this movie?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Not The Day After Tomorrow. The Day After.
Not The Day After Tomorrow. The Day After.
Yeah, made for TV
my father,
movie. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. A very good one. And we're going to cover it on Post-Apocalypse Now at some
nice.
Point. But The Day After was a TV movie all about like avoiding nuclear war, basically like the aftermath of nuclear war on middle America.
And it was almost like a how-to documentary.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, has kind of a bleak but maybe hopeful question mark ending. I don't know.
Have you ever seen Jericho? It's a 2-season show.
I have not seen Jericho.
It is.
My father watched Jericho.
Yeah,
but I've heard it's one we need to tackle.
It's got the same vibe. It's so it is a small town in Kansas that mm-hmm. is so remote that the bombs drop, but they aren't affected except for obviously
right.
they are. And it got 2 seasons. It's pretty good.
I've heard good things. So yeah, that definitely was like a formative thing, mm-hmm. and why I'm starting a post-apocalypse podcast.
It scared the crap out of me as a kid, so I completely agree.
Okay, what about you, Scott? Though, tell me about.
Well, I'll do another deep cut since both you said 80s movies. I'll go with The Explorers, a movie by Joe Dante. Have you guys watched it at all? Okay, so.
Nope.
It stars River Phoenix, and it is a bunch of, it's like a Goonies, a Stand By Me, same kind of thing. Bunch of young guys who are mostly outcasts. And River Phoenix's character is a, you know, genius, can do anything kind of thing. And he figures out how to create a shield that is airtight and light as a feather. So he uses it, and his buddies use it to make a spaceship out of a tilt-a-whirl ride, and they fly off into space, and shenanigans happen. But it's the actually when they get to space, it actually kind of falls apart. But the movie is very much about being able to find your crowd and your niche, and also being proud of who you are, even if you are the oddball. And it's just a really cool, uplifting show, and it's got a great soundtrack. So, The Explorers, check it out. I think it's 1985, I believe.
Okay. That sounds awesome.
All right. Well, we can put this bit to rest as we move on to start to talk about Season 5, Episode 21, Objects at Rest.
I see what you did there.
Very nice.
All right. We open on Sheridan and Lockley reflecting briefly on their year on the station. And Sheridan, this is the guy who, let us remember last episode, refused to let the guy who needed to leave most quietly, Jakar, leave quietly, say he doesn't want any pomp and circumstance for his exit. No Midwest goodbyes from Captain Kansas here. He wants to just peace out into the night. after refusing to let Jakar, who's being actively mobbed, do so.
Yeah, yeah.
Rude as hell.
This scene is a little strange to me in that we're in CNC. It's just Lockley and Sheridan. Mm-hmm. Everyone else is at rest, you know, obviously. Why is CNC ever offline?
Well, if you remember, Laura, back in season one, there was a discussion where there's that 1 hour every 32 hours where it goes offline. That's how, I don't know. I'm just.
Listener, this is not a visual podcast, but Scott did a very nice, like, push up of his glasses at the beginning of that.
I did my best.
Very nice touch.
I did my best Facebook Scott is wrong fanboy impression. Well, actually.
Man, I lurk on the Grey 17 Facebook page. Mm-hmm. I think I've said maybe three things.
Yeah.
But I see those comments, and it just makes me so grateful for our Discord community here at Who Are You? Lockley and Sheridan get their goodbyes in here, and we cut over to Veer, who runs into Talon, who has been summoned to the station by Jakar, who has straight up ghosted him.
Ope.
Talon breaks into Jakar's quarters, which Jakar was anticipating, and finds a message waiting for him, explaining why he's been summoned. He's the new Narn ambassador. We get a last little bit about maybe they need someone more warrior than priest this time around. In what marks the last Jakar speech of the show.
I just need to take a moment to just fanboy out about Marshall Teague. I love Marshall. He's great as Talon. And this is mm-hmm. my favorite minor character arc in the show. Because remember, when we met Talon, he was, you know, being brainwashed by aliens. He didn't say much of anything. Sheridan mm-hmm. saved him or, you know, didn't kill him. And as we see this guy grow, he becomes that right-hand man of Jakar. And now, if there's ever a Babylon 5 TNG, he's the guy. I love it. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great character.
I just love the sword. I just want a character who carries a sword everywhere.
Well, and Marshall still has that sword. He took it home with him.
That's nice. Lucky. I love it.
In fact, I actually think it may have been his to begin with. Like, he brought it. So it was his prop. Don't quote me on that, but I think that's what happened. But he definitely has it still.
Yeah. That's the dream. Be on a TV show. Bring your own prop.
Right? Bring your own sword. Speaking of the next generation, Franklin names Lillian Hobbs as the new head of Medlab as he prepares to leave for Earthdome. Big ups for her being a giveaway name character. That's a lot of fun that you won that auction, I think it was, to have a character named after you, and then you end up having that character take over and be an important part of the story years later.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Much more so than anyone else who won that contest.
I'm still thinking Pig Boy from Masters of the Universe. The kid won the contest and they stick him in a little pig outfit and you can see him for about 2 seconds. And he's in the credits as Pig Boy. Speaking of the 80s.
Yeah. She eventually accepts after some encouragement, despite her initial reservations on taking over. She feels there are people more qualified. But Franklin doesn't care about people who might be individually more qualified. He wants someone who's more of a generalist and also someone who's not going to tolerate anyone's bullshit.
I love this recognition that sometimes generalists are superior to specialists, that you need someone who can think generally and broadly about situations and things and processes and not be too specialized. I think that's something we're starting to see in companies and mm-hmm. situations in our world right now, is we have a lot of specialists who don't get the general stuff.
And as a fellow jack of all trade, I'm all for that too.
Yeah, same. This is totally self-serving here.
Can we assume that she was the one who, you know, called him out on the stems, that he's like, yeah, and I know you can step up to power because you did it to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Love it.
As they're talking, Sheridan gets off of a lift and Franklin runs to catch up with him and say his goodbyes, which happen mostly off camera, which appropriate for Franklin and Sheridan's relationship in the show.
Since most of it was retconned anyway in the beginning. Oh, they met before. Yeah. We didn't see that one either. But, you know, it's nice, though. I mean, Yeah, we get to see over the past two episodes people leaving. And I like the idea that some of it's on set. You know, Sheridan puts his hands on Franklin's shoulders. They walk away together. They may go, you know, down to a brothel down below. Who knows? But yeah, it's just not everything needs to be said. You just let it go.
And I mean, of like all of the relationships that are going to be maintained as characters leave, it's probably, besides Sheridan and Delenn for obvious reasons, Sheridan and Franklin are still going to be working directly together for the next, we know after next episode, 20 some years. He's still the head. He's still doing the things that he was doing. Sheridan's still involved in the government. So they are going to remain co-workers for a very long time still. We cut over to Delenn packing when Lanier shows up to help them move. Oh, Lanier, you don't even own a truck.
Okay. So we brought up Lanier. I know we're not to the same
yet, right.
But I want you all to know that I have made myself prepared and calm, so I won't yell too much. Okay, continue.
Okay. Well, that's the magic of editing and leveling, as I know you're well aware.
Yeah, Lanier's just going to drive the U-Haul, right? He's not even bringing truck to the game.
Mm. Right. Besides the fact that he wasn't even invited. Number one proves she's doing a better job than Garibaldi on her second day by having just fucking paperwork around instead of trusting nothing. Because Garibaldi doesn't trust teeps, email, texts, calls, or the written word. And she actually has, like, typed out reports she can hand people about how stuff is doing. She's already done a superior job.
I guarantee you, number one knows how to delegate, right? She ran a resistance. She knows how to delegate. She's not going to be sitting there 24/7 listening for the one phone call that Garibaldi fell asleep on.
Right. She already has people in shifts handling that shit.
See, now our guys over at Gray 17 would say Garibaldi was never good at his job. At least some of them would. Now, I love Garibaldi. I think he's great. But was he ever, truly ever good at his job of security chief?
No.
Ever?
Yeah.
No. I mean, we have a running gag how he graduated from his mother's homeschool security school where he learned everything he knows. And Zach, fellow graduate of the Garibaldi homeschool security school. They both definitely do things their way, and their way is not necessarily the correct way by any measure.
Yeah, yeah.
We cut over to Mars, and we find Garibaldi is running Edgar's for lease because God forbid we let her do anything besides be a damsel in distress. Scott, we love lease.
No, I mean, you're not wrong. Save me for my first...
This is a pro-lease podcast.
Yeah. Save me for my first husband, Michael. Oh, wait, he got written off the show. Save me for my second husband, Michael.
Yeah, it's terrible. Franklin gets in his shuttle for Earth, and we go over ISN reporting about how Sheridan Delenn's ride is there to pick them up. That's got to be frustrating. And then Sheridan and Lanier have a super awkward conversation. This is rough. He's just like, you know, like, thanks for coming out uninvited. I guess it's been a big help for Delenn.
Well, I gotta tell you, as a nerdy boy of the 80s and 90s, I've never had the conversation where the pine of my love life, unrequited, is in the other room while I'm talking to her boyfriend. I've never had that conversation ever in my life. None.
Yeah.
Lee.
I'm so sorry.
Lee.
Sheridan's like, you can always stay with us when you're on Minbar. And I'm just like, he's probably got family. He's definitely got like co-workers from Ranger School. Also, Ranger Barracks. Like, he has options here. And he would be a fool to take this one.
So,
and he's just like, yeah.
I'm gonna weave a little bit of a conspiracy theory. So Lanier like hesitates and says, we're on a bit of a break, and this may be covered in the books and I haven't read all the books, but is he actually still in Ranger School at this point or did he quit? Cause the only thing we hear later on is Delenn says, we called the Ranger, whatever, and he's not there, but he's just like,
we're on a bit of a break. Like, did he quit?
He might have quit. I didn't read that way. When they say he's not at the thing, I think Delenn was assuming that he would have just ran and returned to his duties after failing to save the president.
As one does after attempting misdemeanor murder. Or not misdemeanor, manslaughter murder.
This whole thing is suspicious because he does say he's having like a working holiday. And yeah, I don't know. I wondered, was this a setup at one point? I don't know.
Whenever I refer to this episode, when it comes to Lanier, and we've talked about this a couple times in our Beyond the Rim, where we talk spoilers on our podcast, this is character assassination to me. I think this ruins Lanier. And I think Bill Mumy, from what I understand, agrees. And I've never been able to figure out what JMS was thinking, aside from maybe he'll come back and crusade and we'll fix it then and everything else. But if you just watch Babylon 5 proper, and you have enjoyed Lanier from season one on, this is the worst outcome you can ever do to a character. At least give him an opportunity to find redemption in some way. Don't leave him on episode, you know, the penultimate episode in this place.
Yeah.
I hate this so much. And of course, in Sleeping in Light, we find out that, you know, he's gone. And if you read the books, it's because he blows up a building and dies in it. But I mean, it's, I love Lanier as a character. I always have. And I hate this decision by JMS. Hate it.
And maybe I'm projecting on this, but it feels like Bill has not been into it this whole season. Like, his acting doesn't feel the same. And maybe that's him just trying to portray a turn. But yeah, we as the audience don't like this, most of us.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm projecting, but it feels like he's not loving it either.
No, he was outspoken about not liking the season 5 arc for the character.
It doesn't go along with Lanier. I mean, I get characters evolve, and I want characters to evolve, but this is a hard right turn, and it's all about, I'm a whiny little incel who can't get the girl I want. And maybe that's an episode, but that's not a season, and that's not the end of your entire character. Everyone else gets a good goodbye. Everyone else except Lanier.
Yeah. I really wish it had been the beginning of him, if it had to be here. You know, show some growth out of it. Show that there is hope out of this for that kind of, you know, disaffected young man who might be feeling these things for a woman and feeling rejected. Show them find the way out and find that life is more than winning a prize of a woman. I just, as a little girl, I needed that, and I didn't get it here.
I think if you take this bit and move it to 12 episodes ago, and change almost nothing else, it really changes a lot with his character. Because if you have this happen, and then he goes back to ranger training, and he saves that dude, and he also, you know, basically attempts suicide.
Oh, that would be cool.
Twice?
Yeah. So,
like,
rewriting this episode a little bit. So everything happens, and instead of Lanier running like a little whatever, in this episode he does exactly what he does, and he actually, maybe Sheridan's not even there, but he makes that sacrifice, or attempts to make that sacrifice, and does it right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, please. JMS reboot.
So.
Freebie, take that one. It's free.
No, wait, no, we can't do that. He'll block me on Twitter.
No.
You didn't hear me
say
that.
Oh, no.
I'm not worried about him listening to this podcast anyways.
Yeah, me neither.
I wasn't on mine either until he yelled at me because I said he was the wrong age. I was like, oh, crap, he listens.
Ugh, that must be intimidating.
It was scary as duff. I don't know if I can say it. I've said it twice now, but I don't know if I can.
Oh, no, we fucking curse on this show.
It was scary as shit. I said he was like 72. He's like, Scott, I'm 65. I'm like, holy God, you listen. Oh, shit.
He's only 65?
Maybe 66. He's definitely not 72 like I said he was.
See, he can't tweet at me because I'm not on Twitter anymore. Ha, 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 ha.
Don't at me, JMS. No. Well, actually, please do. It's kind of fun. He's 69. Sorry, he's 69.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
So anyways, they get to the Zocalo and three's a crowd. John puts Delenn on the spot And she drops a great line here. I'm going to start using this. At the very least, we'll pass this way again.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. She's talking about how they don't have a word for goodbyes, which also just like hits so hard when they say goodnight in Sleeping in Light next episode.
Yes, good call.
Anyways, we get a lot of extras for this scene, and all these extras are cast and crew because this was the last produced episode of Babylon 5. I'm pretty sure, this is conjecture, but when they walk out, there is a very tall character in a very bad wig who kind of sees them out as like the last person watching them. That has to be John Flynn, right?
Could be.
It's hard to say, but dude is the right size, yeah, right build, and is very obviously wearing a wig to me. So, yeah, but there's a lot of cast and crew here. That's why there's just this absurd amount of extras and every random outfit they could find. And Zach is waiting and notes he'll still be here when they turn out the lights.
Yeah.
Which we find to be true next episode.
Yeah.
And then they get on the White Star, and this is where the episode, I mean, really starts to fall apart for me. I know this is such a random thing to be upset about, but they're all like, Lanier has arranged for the captain of this White Star to remain on Babylon 5 for them to deliver Sheridan and Delenn so that they can captain the ship. Is he just like, one, this captain just going to hang out on Babylon 5 for a week or whatever?
Yeah. Working holiday, duh.
Right? And I know this ship had to have a Minbari captain, because there's no way a human captain would have agreed to this. Because the human captain would have gone, well, after we drop them off on Minbar? Because he's not concerned about the ceremony of things. He's concerned about the practicality.
Mm-hmm.
As we tend to see being the major difference between Minbari captains and,
yes,
and human captains.
Yeah. This is like, another sign that I was like, wait, is this all a setup? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Did Lanier get rid of the captain because he's done something to the ship?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. No, it's a weird.
It's just the plot
theory.
How
deep does this go?
Yeah.
Because Lanier seems shocked, too, when he sees that the weapon doohickey is leaking.
Yeah. But because we've set these weird things in place, it's like, wait, were we supposed to be following them?
This is all conjecture as well, and I have absolutely no evidence of this, so please don't at me later. But it almost feels like this is vindictive towards the character of Lanier or towards Bill. And like JMS, which JMS has a vindictive streak, he'll be the first to tell you. And I just feel like he was pissed and wanted to do something.
Hmm.
And this is like, well, I'm just going to shoehorn this in here, right here.
Hmm. I hope not.
Anyways, we see the next generation, as it were, in CNC, seeing the last of the old guard off. No new Minbari ambassador, which I thought was interesting.
Well, because he just got screwed over, and, you know, as I was just saying, because absolutely, this should have ended with Lanier on that bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that was a whole setup, too. I mean, I'm beating a dead horse here. But the whole idea for Delenn, and I know Lanier didn't see it the same way, but Delenn saw him as her Dukat. From season one, she's been training him to replace her. And here we are. And everyone else has their predecessor or their, but not Lanier. Nope. Nope, nope, nope.
There's a couple of things I was expecting to happen at this point. Like, okay, so the ISA is moving its headquarters to Minbar. They are clearly still ambassadors on the station because Veer is there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Veer is not moving to Minbar with them, so they're clearly maintaining ambassadorial duties on Babylon 5. Why don't we get introduced to a vice president or someone who's going to represent the Interstellar Alliance on Babylon 5?
That's a good point. Or maybe that's number one. Maybe she's double duty. I don't know.
Maybe.
Because luckily, to this very moment, it's still Earth Force, so it's not her.
Yeah.
Right.
It would make sense if she was Earth's ambassador,
mm-hmm.
which was, you know, Sheridan and Sinclair's job when they were in charge of the station. They were also Earth's ambassador. But yeah, you'd expect and maybe it is number one, but you'd think there'd be someone who was more of a diplomat to represent the Interstellar Alliance there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or you'd expect Veer to go to Minbar with them.
Yeah.
If number one is head of security, do you really want to talk to her if you're the other ambassadors? Like, does that make you feel a little weird and squeaky?
Just bet.
Should.
Yeah.
This is where we get the ranger finding the leaky gas. Lanier betrays, just like Morden said he would. We've already beat this to death. Sheridan uses the other ranger's Denbach to break the glass and save himself and the ranger. And Lanier runs away in disgrace. Delenn tells John about them searching his quarters, and they find a manifesto.
Yeah, he's the unit. He's diary. He's the goddamn Unabomber now. Seriously.
Yeah.
Look, what is a podcast for if not beating a dead horse? Like,
fair.
This is why we're here. This is weird. I don't like it.
And she's already forgiven Lanier for leaving her husband to die.
The one thing I will that this episode does help with is my guys just had a conversation recently because we had the scene with unrequited love and Delenn absentmindedly saying no love is unrequited. And my guys truly still, a lot of them still think that Delenn fundamentally knows that he's in love with her. But in this episode, she says, I had inklings that he had feelings for me. Delenn is so oblivious to this. And that frustrates me too.
She says it. She has said it. Like, we have heard her say it out loud. Mm. You know, it's come on. Like, she knows.
This
is not news.
This whole Lanier Delenn stuff, it just frustrates the ever loving hell out of me in so many ways.
It's character assassination on Lanier.
Yeah.
It has been the entire time. But it is also really shitty for Delenn's character.
Yes. She gets, I mean, we dabble in this throughout the show. Delenn has agency and she's a powerful person and she's great. And then every once in a while, she just turns into absent-minded, oh, I wasn't the leader of a civilization, Delenn. I don't understand.
Right. I'm not an excellent diplomat. I have no idea how to handle this situation with an underling who has obsessions with me. Like,
this is the same Delenn that was pulling all the strings back in The Gathering. Just pulling all of them, like scaring the shit out of Jakar with her 10 rings. And now she doesn't understand what's happening with Lanier. No, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
No, I refuse to accept Delenn is unaware. She has too much agency. She's proven herself to be one of the most observant characters on this show.
She's the one, man. The one that is.
She always know what the fuck is going on. And for her to just be, I mean, a blind spot for Lanier, an argument could be made that she's just too close to him, I suppose, to realize, but that's absolute bullshit. And I can't abide.
Yeah.
The dude does not abide.
No. We land on Minbar. We get some really cool, like, Weeping Willow style fireworks that don't exist in real life. I don't know if y'all caught that. I really enjoyed that. If we're going to do CGI fireworks, I'm glad we're doing non-normal fireworks. I want the weird shit. Give me the cool alien fireworks.
It's the one time.
Sweet balcony that they've got here. Wonder if anything emotional is going to happen on this balcony.
Nothing at all. Nothing to see here, folks. Move along.
Yeah. Yeah, they should put, like, a bench here or something. Anyways, yeah. I really appreciate the balcony callback for Sheridan because this is also would be a sweet place to watch a white star come in with a nuke.
There's where Lanier's been. I'm coming back.
Hello, boys! I'm back!
Oh, no.
And Londo is here waiting for them on Minbar. He plays some lip service to friendship versus politics because he's just like, everyone's like, we were not expecting you to be here, let alone be friendly, Londo. You did talk mad shit.
Yeah, I'm about to say.
He asks for some booze, but there isn't any on the entire planet.
That's just painful, isn't it? Because we know what he's doing. We've been told this since season 2. And I'm just like, he's trying so hard. He wants his friends to help. Oh, my God. And he wants to stop what's happening. Londo, man, stop making your bed so well.
Yeah. Literally, he's crying for help.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Delenn can almost see the keeper for a moment, but Londo distracts with an urn meant to be given to their child at 16 years per a Centauri tradition.
And we'll have a book about it later.
Yay! Yep. Lanier FaceTimes Delenn to apologize and then promptly fuck off.
FaceTime with a Zoom.
Yep. Lando obliquely tells Delenn and Sheridan how fucked he is before he goes. And on his ship, the Drak reward him. And we see the Keeper waiting in the jar for David.
Mm. Dun, dun, dun.
So sinister. The Keeper stuff really fascinated me the first time around when I was a kid. Just the whole idea. And the Centauri books were worth it for me for more of that sort of lore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's just sad that there's, I mean, okay, again, there are books. I get it. But most people don't read the books. It's sad that there's never a payoff. I mean, we were supposed to get some more Drak stuff in Crusade, but obviously Crusade didn't go long enough. It's just, it's the fact that there's no payoff to this entire Keeper angle. Like, we never see what happens with David. We obviously know he's safe because Delenn says our son is safe. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
What happens?
Right.
It's just, I wish we could have gotten
more.
Well,
that would have been before. So, Sleeping in Light.
Yes. It's
20 years.
19
right?
at this point. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We know it happens after those flashbacks because Lando is dead and Veer is Emperor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we also can time that David, like, and even JMS has said on the Usenet's, like, Sleeping in Light is supposed to be right around David's 16th birthday.
Yeah, because in season one, Lando calls out that my dream is 20 years from now. So it's all at the same time. Yeah, or mostly the same time.
Yeah, well, yeah, that makes sense, if it's a couple of years there.
So it'll be season one, but, I mean,
Yeah, so that hasn't happened. Like, the Keeper has not would have not struck David while Lando is still alive.
Oh, okay.
That is too soon.
See, I'm reading it the other way. I think it does, and that's why Delenn and Sheridan find their way on Centauri Prime. That's how they get captured. They're trying to save David.
Hmm.
So, from the Keeper.
All of that is unclear.
It is. It's unclear, but I'm just thinking right now we're 19 years from Sleeping in Light in this episode. War Without End happened 20 years after War Without End. So that would be 17-ish years, kind of, sort of. Mm-hmm. And obviously Delenn hasn't had the child yet. So I've always assumed, and I may be completely wrong, that the reason why Delenn and Sheridan are even on Centauri Prime is because David was attacked by the Keeper.
That makes sense to me. John can't sleep like always. He knows he's going to be dead before his child comes of age. And so he records a message. Mm-hmm. Trust your mom. Make mistakes. Pick yourself up. And we get this whole sentimental message. Yeah, this speech hit me in the feels.
Yeah. It does, especially when you have kids too. It's just like, oh, yep. Because we're all there. I mean, we don't know we have a. We all know we have a ticking clock. We don't know 19 years from now you're gone.
Right.
But it's just like, what do you say to somebody where you know, hopefully, that you're not going to be around for all of their lives? What do you say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the goal is not to be around for all of their lives. Hopefully.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Mm-hmm.
And. No, I think this speech hit me harder than actually Sleeping in Light, if I'm going to be honest, like, especially having, you know, a one-year-old baby that was very wanted and waited for a long time. You know, it's just the great sadness of, I can't believe I'm choking up.
Aww.
The great sadness of parenting is like never knowing how long you're going to be with them.
Mm-hmm. And just hoping beyond hope. Yeah, that they're going to have it a little better than you did. But again, you're not going to know, hopefully.
Yeah.
I also like the fact that he obviously calls out Delenn, but he also uses the advice his dad gave him, too. So he's hearkening back to his dad and telling David the advice that mattered to him, too. Never start a fight. Always finish it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Laura, I always get in the feels whenever there's any kind of father-son, father-daughter stuff, man. The end of Interstellar, I lose my flocking mind every time.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I could watch that one right now.
Oh,
yeah.
You waited? My dad made me a promise.
Oh!
Yeah, I, you know, don't have kids, so I will just, I'm just kind of...
You have...
Yes.
You have had a father, though. I think that you understand it from at least that perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
We cut over to Garibaldi buying the headquarters from Power Rangers as this plays. I don't know if you caught. That's the... That's what's on the newspaper. He's looking at properties. And we see the rest of the cast here, old and new, as this all plays out. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It honestly, I mean, we obviously Sleeping in Light is the finale, but of course it was filmed in season four and all that good stuff. So this is a great, aside from the linear stuff, this is a great series finale. If it ended right here, aside from the unanswered questions, I think it'd be a nice way to fade out.
And what a unique place to make basically a two-part series finale, knowing that you've filmed and canned the series finale a year ago. Like, just from a production standpoint, that's such an interesting thing to think about, because I can't name another TV show that ended like that.
Well, and JMS plays with it too, like when Sheridan's talking to Alan and says, and Alan says, "Well, I'll probably be here when they shut the lights off." I bet you will be, because we filmed that, and you are. Ha 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 ha.
Yeah, that's a nice in-joke for those in the know
Which,
at the time.
Which, by the way, I have to take another moment just to, because this will be the last time when we, for me here, is I just continue want to heap tons of praise on Jeff Conway.
Yeah.
Conway, because he went through so much stuff in his life. But for this brief moment, he was, he was, everything was going well for him. And it's great that he got the opportunity to come in as somebody who basically just threw a line to, is like, "Yeah, we don't trust you to be on here for long. So, but here, do a co-star for an episode." And he wrote it out and became a quintessential character. And he's on the bridge at the end. So, I mean, that's all because Jeff Conway stayed sober and worked his ass off to get there. That's the only reason why that character is there right there.
And I mean, we talked about this a couple episodes ago, you know, Zach being one of the main people to confront Garibaldi about his alcoholism and the tragedy that is Jeff Conway and Jerry
and
Doyle,
Jerry
both
Doyle.
Having this that conversation, but those actors knowing, you know, knowing what happens to both of them and then also, you know, knowing what their past was, is just, it's so heavy, those two interacting like that.
Well, and Jerry Doyle being the prick that he was, JMS pointed out, I think his autobiography, that on the last day of shooting, just to prove a point, Jerry Doyle took a shot in front of JMS.
Fuck.
That seems on brand.
Yeah. It's definitely on brand. Say what you will about Jerry Doyle, but that's Jerry Doyle.
Scott, I'm really curious, because when we ask people to come on the podcast, we do let you pick your episode. Why did you pick this one?
Well, because most of season five was already booked.
That's fair.
I do really enjoy this episode, and I like the idea of chatting about the series as a whole, and we get to do that kind of with this episode. So it's aside from, and also I like that I get to be really angry when it comes to Lanier, and it gives us something to talk about. But yeah, no, I do like this episode a lot. I am an appreciative guy of not being able to tie up all the loose ends. And I also like hopeful stories, as we alluded to originally. And so the idea that B5 for at least a while continues, and these guys continue their stories and they continue to do things, and almost everyone except for Londo, which that's his story, so that's a given, and Lanier, everyone else gets a good ending, at least at this part of their lives. And I really do appreciate that, because you don't get that a lot in sci-fi anymore.
Yeah, we've entered kind of a dark space.
Well,
in our media,
to quote the number 9 doctor, just this once everybody lives.
Well, that's the episode. Has is our way here. We rank our episodes on scales of Babylon's 1 to 5. Scott, as our guest, how do you feel about this episode?
If the Lanier bullshit was not there, I would give it a high 4. I think it's still not Sleeping in the Light territory, which obviously we'll have that comes after this. But Because that Lanier stuff, it really, for one, it slams the brakes on the episode. And it's just not good. I would give it a 3.
Yeah. I'm of the same opinion. Like, the Lanier stuff, there was too much, like, uncertainty. Like, it's, some of it felt like it's a setup, and maybe he had sabotaged something, or maybe he didn't. I don't know. It takes everything out. There's the character assassination, as you've mentioned. I don't even know if I can give that a 3. I might be a 2.5 down here, because I really hate the incel plot. It's really deeply uncomfortable for personal reasons. I can't with it. It would have been a high 4 without all of the Lanier stuff. I totally agree with that.
This episode definitely without the Lanier stuff, high 4, but it's there and we can't get rid of it. You know, that's not how media works. And it really drops it for me. Honestly, not just the Lanier stuff for Bill, but also for Delenn. Really just ruins this episode for me in a lot of ways.
Right.
So I was going to give it a 2. And I mean, it doesn't help that you've got Sleeping in Light right after this, which is just fantastic. Like, it's just
phenomenal.
I do like the choice that they made, that the past like 3, maybe even 4 episodes have all been a finale. They give all of our characters room to breathe. So it's not just like a wham, bam, this is the series finale, we're done. The show that did it better, and everyone come at me, because I'm going to say Deep Space Nine, but it's the same way with Deep Space Nine. They had that 9 or 10 episode arc that ended the show. And I love when when a show gives us time to say goodbye. And so that these, especially Objects in Motion, Objects of Rest, and Sleeping in Light, you get that opportunity. When I was watching it on TNT, I had some time to say goodbye to my show, and I really did appreciate that. I didn't need new, you know, space battles and stuff. I just needed to say goodbye to these characters.
Yeah, I think you can't get away from Sleeping in Light without comparing it a little bit to What We Leave Behind. And those finales both super affected me when I watched them, you know, in real time.
No, it's... Will.
Oh, Jake looking out the window at his dad. Yeah. Oh, my God. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. You want to make a late 30-something nerd cry. Just put Jake looking out the window at the wormhole and Delenn reaching for the sunset from the end of Sleeping in Light, and just
it's
loop
the same.
Them. Like we're in some kind of fucking Clockwork Orange hellscape and just weeping.
And no, they did not copy it off of the one.
No, we
don't know. It's just the same because they're both good writers. Ira Stephen Bear and JMS, good writers.
It is one excuse for us to throw our last 9-to-5 drop in, though. Working
9-to-5. I want to know what the hell is going on.
Not yours.
Calm never got me a damn thing.
Don't turn your back on me. Don't you even try to walk away from me. Just who the hell do you think you are?
If you have something to say to me, say it.
Now get the hell out of our galaxy. 9-to-5.
That's enough!
That's true, yeah.
All right. Well, all of that said, next week, Sleeping in Light, Season 5, Episode 22, the series finale. 20 years after the foundation of the Interstellar Alliance, Sheridan summons his dearest friends for a bittersweet reunion.
Bring your tissues, kids.
Bring them.
Bring them.
I mean, as we will say next episode, we're recording this one after we recorded our Sleeping in Light review. I cried 3 times. I said it in the Discord. I'll say it in the episode. You know, it's
checks out. Checks out. Yeah.
All right. And who else will be there with us but Jeremy Siegel? Thank you so much, Jeremy, for your fantastic theme music that we use here. You can find more of Jeremy's work at jeremysiegel42.bandcamp.com, where he is the only Jeremy Siegel that makes music on Bandcamp. And then also on Spotify as Nuclear Jaguar.
And thank you to Angry Duck Time Machine on Instagram for our podcast artwork.
Aaron, thanks so much for editing this episode and all of our other episodes. We really appreciate all the time you put into making our podcast intelligible.
Yeah. It's the Lord's work, really.
And also funny. Like, editing has so much to do with comedic timing, so we really do appreciate all the work you put in there, too.
Thank you, Scott, for coming and being here today.
This was fun. Yeah.
Thanks for joining us, Scott.
It was a lot of fun. I look forward to our future project.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes.
The thing.
The thing. And I'm actually getting to listen to Babylon 5 podcasts now. I outright have refused for the last several years because I don't want to hear something and forget I heard something and just lift it. It's something I'm terrified of doing. But now that we've recorded Sleeping in Light, I've started listening to Babylon 5 podcasts. So
our first season.
You'll be spending a lot more time with me, even though it won't be the other way around.
Well, we still got our other thing that we started that we never even tried to finish. We got to finish that one, too.
Yeah, we recorded the one episode of The Voice of the Resistance and then podcast.
And that was only like 5 months ago. We're doing fine. We're doing fine.
We got to do that. All right. And thank you, listener, for joining us as well. We really appreciate all the time you choose to spend with us. We got Discord, the social medias, wherever. We'll see you there.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Have a good one, Internet. Bye. See you next week.
Justice for Lanier.